Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited too. Of the many responsibilities granted to a president by our Constitution, few are more serious or more consequential than selecting a Supreme Court justice. The members of our highest court are granted life tenure, often serving long after the presidents who appointed them. And they are charged with the vital task of applying principles put to paper more than 20 centuries ago to some of the most difficult questions of our time. So I don't take this decision lightly. I've made it only after deep reflection and careful deliberation. While there are many qualities that I admire in judges across the spectrum of judicial philosophy and that I seek in my own nominee, there are a few that stand out that I just want to mention. First and foremost is a rigorous intellect, a mastery of the law, an ability to hone in on the key issues and provide clear answers to complex legal questions. Second is a recognition of the limits of the judicial role, an understanding that a judge's job is to interpret, not make law, to approach decisions without any particular ideology or agenda, but rather a commitment to impartial justice, a respect for precedent, and a determination to faithfully apply the law to the facts at hand. Now, these two qualities are essential, I believe, for anyone who would sit on our nation's highest court. And yet these qualities alone are insufficient. We need something more. For as Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, "The life of the law has not been logic, it has been experience. Experience being tested by obstacles and barriers, by hardship and misfortune. Experience insisting, persisting, and ultimately overcoming those barriers. It is experience that can give a person a common touch and a sense of compassion, an understanding of how the world works and how ordinary people live. And that is why it is a necessary ingredient in the kind of justice we need on the Supreme Court. Now, the process of reviewing and selecting a successor to Justice Souter has been rigorous and comprehensive, not least because of the standard that Justice Souter himself has set with his formidable intellect and fair-mindedness and decency. I've sought the advice of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, including every member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. My team has reached out to constitutional scholars, advocacy organizations, and bar associations representing an array of interests and opinions. And I want to thank members of my staff and administration have worked so hard and given so much of their time as part of this effort. After completing this exhaustive process, I have decided to nominate an inspiring woman who I believe will make a great justice, Judge Sonia Sotomayor of the great state of New York. Over a distinguished career that spans three decades, Judge Sotomayor has worked at almost every level of our judicial system, providing her with a depth of experience and a breadth of perspective that will be invaluable as a Supreme Court justice. It's a measure of her qualities and her qualifications that Judge Sotomayor was nominated to the U.S. District Court by a Republican president, George H.W. Bush, and promoted to the Federal Court of Appeals by a Democrat, Bill Clinton. Walking in the door, she would bring more experience on the bench and more varied experience on the bench than anyone currently serving on the United States Supreme Court had when they were appointed. Judge Sotomayor is a distinguished graduate of two of America's leading universities. She's been a big city prosecutor and a corporate litigator. She spent 6 years as a trial judge on the U.S. District Court and would replace Justice Souter as the only justice with experience as a trial judge, a perspective that would enrich the judgments of the court. For the past 11 years, she has been a judge on the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit of New York, one of the most demanding circuits in the country. There, she has handed down decisions on a range of constitutional and legal questions that are notable for their careful reasoning, earning the respect of colleagues on the bench, the admiration of many lawyers who argue cases in her court, and the adoration of her clerks, who look to her as a mentor. During her tenure on the district court, she presided over roughly 450 cases. One case in particular involved a matter of enormous concern to many Americans, including me, the baseball strike of 1994-95. In a decision that reportedly took her just 15 minutes to announce, a swiftness much appreciated by baseball fans everywhere, she issued an injunction that helped end the strike. Some say that Judge Sotomayor saved baseball. Judge Sotomayor came to the district court from a law firm where she was a partner focused on complex commercial litigation, gaining insight into the workings of a global economy. Before that, she was a prosecutor in the Manhattan DA's office, serving under the legendary Robert Morgenthau, an early mentor of Sonia's who still sings her praises today. There, Sonia learned what crime can do to a family and a community and what it takes to fight it. It's a career that has given her not only a sweeping overview of the American judicial system, but a practical understanding of how the law works in the everyday lives of the American people. But as impressive and meaningful as Judge Sotomayor's sterling credentials in the law is her own extraordinary journey. Born in the South Bronx, she was raised in a housing project not far from Yankee Stadium, making her a lifelong Yankees fan. I hope this will not disqualify her in the eyes of the New Englanders in the Senate. Sonia's parents came to New York from Puerto Rico during Second World War. Her mother is part of the Women's Army Corps. And in fact, her mother's here today, and I'd like us all to acknowledge Sonia's mom. Sonia's mom had been a little choked up. But Sonia's mother began a family tradition of giving back to this country. Sonia's father was a factory worker with a third grade education who didn't speak English. But like Sonia's mother, he had a willingness to work hard, a strong sense of family, and a belief in the American dream. When Sonia was 9, her father passed away. And her mother worked 6 days a week as a nurse to provide for Sonia and her brother, who's also here today, as a doctor, and a terrific success in his own right. But Sonia's mom bought the only set of encyclopedias in the neighborhood, sent her children to a Catholic school called Cardinal Spellman, out of a belief that with a good education here in America, all things are possible. With the support of family, friends, and teachers, Sonia earned scholarships to Princeton, where she graduated at the top of her class, and Yale Law School, where she was an editor of the Yale Law Journal, stepping onto the path that led her here today. Along the way, she's faced down barriers, overcome the odds, and lived out the American dream that brought her parents here so long ago. And even as she has accomplished so much in her life, she has never forgotten where she began, never lost touch with the community that supported her. What Sonia will bring to the court, then, is not only the knowledge and experience acquired over a course of a brilliant legal career, but the wisdom accumulated from an inspiring life's journey. It's my understanding that Judge Sotomayor's interest in the law was sparked as a young girl by reading the Nancy Drew series. And that when she was diagnosed with diabetes at the age of 8, She was informed that people with diabetes can't grow up to be police officers or private investigators like Nancy Drew. In essence, she was told she'd have to scale back her dreams. Well, Sonia, what you've shown in your life is that it doesn't matter where you come from, what you look like, or what challenges life throws your way. No dream is beyond reach in the United States of America. And when Sonia Sotomayor ascends those marble steps to assume her seat on the highest court of the land, America will have taken another important step towards realizing the ideal that is etched above its entrance, equal justice under the law. I hope the Senate acts in a bipartisan fashion, as it has in confirming Judge Sotomayor twice before, and as swiftly as possible, so that she can take her seat on the court in September and participate in deliberations as the court chooses which cases it will hear this coming year. And with that, I'd like all of you to give a warm greeting as I invite Judge Sotomayor to say a few words.
I was just counseled not to be nervous. That's almost impossible. Thank you, Mr. President, for the most humbling honor of my life. You have nominated me to serve on the country's highest court, and I am deeply moved. I could not, in the few minutes I have today, mention the names of the many friends and family who have guided and supported me throughout my life and who have been instrumental in helping me realize my dreams. I see many of those faces in this room. Each of you, whom I love deeply, will know that my heart today is bursting with gratitude for all you have done for me. The President has said to you that I bring my family. In the audience is my brother, Juan Sotomayor. He's a physician in Syracuse, New York. My sister-in-law, Tracy. My niece, Kylie. She looks like me. My twin nephews, Connor and Corey. I stand on the shoulders of countless people. Yet, there is one extraordinary person who is my life aspiration. That person is my mother, Selena Sotomayor. My mother has devoted her life to my brother and me. And as the President mentioned, she worked often two jobs to help support us after Dad died. I have often said that I am all I am because of her, and I am only half the woman she is. Sitting next to her is Omar Lopez, my mom's husband, and a man whom I have grown to adore. I thank you for all that you have given me and continue to give me. I love you. I chose to be a lawyer and ultimately a judge because I find endless challenge in the complexities of the law. I firmly believe in the rule of law as the foundation for all of our basic rights. For as long as I can remember, I have been inspired by the achievement of our founding fathers. They set forth principles that have endured for more than two centuries. Those principles are as meaningful and relevant in each generation as the generation before. It would be a profound privilege for me to play a role in applying those principles to the questions and controversies we face today. Although I grew up in very modest and challenging circumstances, I consider my life to be immeasurably rich. I was raised in a Bronx public housing project, but studied at two of the nation's finest universities. I did work as an assistant district attorney, prosecuting violent crimes that devastate our communities. But then I joined a private law firm and worked with international corporations doing business in the United States. I have had the privilege of serving as a federal district court trial judge and am now serving as a federal appellate circuit court judge. This wealth of experiences, personal and professional, have helped me appreciate the variety of perspectives that present themselves in every case that I hear. It has helped me to understand, respect, and respond to the concerns and arguments of all litigants who appear before me, as well as to the views of my colleagues on the bench. I strive never to forget the real-world consequences of my decisions on individuals, businesses, and government. It is a daunting feeling to be here. 11 years ago, during my confirmation process for appointment to the Second Circuit, I was given a private tour of the White House. It was an overwhelming experience for a kid from the South Bronx. Yet, never in my wildest childhood imaginings did I ever envision that moment. Let alone did I ever dream that I would live this moment. Mr. President, I greatly appreciate the honor you are giving me, and I look forward to working with the Senate in the confirmation process. I hope that as the Senate and American people learn more about me, they will see that I am an ordinary person who has been blessed with extraordinary opportunities and experiences. Today is one of those experiences. Thank you again, sir.
And there you have it, President Obama introducing and now kissing and hugging his Supreme Court nominee from the Bronx, 54-year-old Sonia Sotomayor, the Second Circuit Federal Appeals Court judge. And let's talk about it. Your reactions coming up here at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or call in 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We've got four guests lined up. And how about calls from anyone who's ever been in our courtroom? As a plaintiff, a defendant, a witness, or a victim, you heard all that experience you just ticked off in New York courtrooms. Did Sonia Sotomayor lock you up? 212-433-WNYC. Sonia Sotomayor from the Bronx for U.S. Supreme Court. We'll talk about it in a minute.
That's why I'm committed to appointing judges who understand how our laws operate in our daily lives. Judges who will uphold the core values of our Constitution. That's why I won't back down when it comes to defending the freedom of women.
President Obama from the campaign trail, and he made good on that campaign promise just moments ago as he introduced his first Supreme Court nominee. She is from the Bronx. She is 54-year-old Sonia Sotomayor from the Second Circuit Federal Appeals Court bench. Let's talk about it. Your reactions, 212-433-WNYC or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We've got a number of guests lined up, starting with Jamie Floyd, who is the host of the show Best Defense on True TV. She's an attorney who worked with President Clinton on Supreme Court nominations and has been a guest host for me on this program this year, as some of you may know. Also, Slate.com, senior editor and legal analyst Emily Bazelon, who covers the Supreme Court for them. Hi, Jamie. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much.
Jamie Floyd, how did you help President Clinton with his Supreme Court selections? What did you do?
Well, it's quite a process. There is a vetting team that's put up together of people who are in the White House from the Justice Department and also essentially independent consultants, prestigious lawyers around Washington and around the country. I was very young at the time. I did a lot of the initial research, but I was in a lot of those meetings, those vetting meetings, very much as they are doing now. I know people on this vetting team. And ultimately, it is the president's decision, of course. And for President Obama, as for President Clinton, that personal meeting, that one-on-one contact, and the instinct about who this is as an individual is very, very important. And so ultimately, despite all of the research we do and all of the recommendations that comes from the White House counsel's office and from the rest of us, in the end, it is the president's decision. And now we go forward with what we refer to as the confirmation process, but it can very often be a confirmation battle.
Jamie, from what you know of President Obama's selection process, how different was it from the way President Clinton worked? You just laid out some of the similarities. Any differences that you're aware of?
Well, what I see as somewhat different is the amount of time that President Obama spent with Sotomayor, the amount of time she spent in the White House. I'm told she was there for over 6 hours for her interview process. And also, she was, my understanding is, his the nominee or the potential nominee he knew the least about when he started this process. Now, she was always on the short list, and so we've all become very familiar with her. But there were others, perhaps, that he initially knew a whole lot more about. President Clinton went with folks that he'd known a lot about and had thought about even in his days as a candidate and as a governor, and ultimately made those picks. But here, a pick that perhaps President Obama might not have even known he would make if you asked him a year or 2 years ago.
And so, Jamie, I know you have to leave us in a minute to go do some other media, so let me just stay with you for one more thing. I gather that, like Judge Sotomayor, you grew up in a New York City housing project.
Yeah.
You could tell us which one if you want. And do you think that brings something meaningful to an interpretation of the Constitution, which is, of course, a Supreme Court justice's job?
Well, I have to say, as a New Yorker who did indeed grow up in the projects down on the Lower East Side of New York, so not the South Bronx, but a similar life experience, and also as a woman of color, this is a very big moment in history. We've had 111 Supreme Court justices. This is the first one who looks like Sonia Sotomayor. And when you look at Barack Obama standing up there, an African-American man naming a Puerto Rican woman from New York, from the South Bronx, it's quite extraordinary. She said all of the things she needed to say, Brian. She had to talk about the belief in the rule of law and the respect for the foundation laid by the founding fathers. That's where the battle's going to be, about some of the comments she's made in speeches given at Berkeley and elsewhere, less in her opinions and more in her public statements. But I do agree with what she has said publicly and indicated here, that her background as a person of color from a modest, humble beginning does influence her ability to understand what the parties in her courtroom bring to her, their circumstances, and the perspectives of the other judges with whom she deals now, and ultimately justices with whom she'll deal as colleagues. And, you know, that's the fundamental battle about the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's what we will see in this nomination process, that quote-unquote activist approach where you allow your personal experiences and background to influence your decisions and to make policy from the bench versus a more conservative approach. I think she will succeed on Capitol Hill, but that's where the battle will be fought.
Jamie Floyd, host of the show Best Defense on True TV, an attorney who worked with President Clinton on Supreme Court nominations and who has been a guest host for me on this program this year and will be again. Jamie, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
And still with us, Emily Bazelon, who covers the Supreme Court for Slate.com. And Emily, Jamie mentioned some of the things that Sonia Sotomayor has said in speeches, not so much from the bench, but in other kinds of venues. And here's one from a speech at UC Berkeley in 2001. She said, quote, "I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life." You think that's going to come back to haunt her now?
I think it's certainly going to come up. I mean, it's a much more kind of blunt statement about gender and ethnic difference than we usually hear from people in power. And, you know, she, to give some context, she was talking about the diverse experiences that she brings to the bench and that other women bring to the bench, and she was making a broader point that she doesn't think it's possible to have to ignore one's experience in judging. And so, you know, it was really within that context that she was talking.
By the way, listeners, we put a link on our website to Twitter searches of the word Sotomayor. It is going nuts. And it is a thing to behold. So you can check that out when you go to comment yourself at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we have linked to the current, what would you call it, I guess high-speed motion of Twitter searches of the word Sotomayor taking place right now. And Emily Bazelon, everyone is talking about Judge Sotomayor's personal story and her Bronx roots, and we'll get more into that here too. But legally speaking, who is Sonia Sotomayor? What's her record? What's her legal claim to fame?
You know, legally speaking, she has a record on the Second Circuit, the appeals court, that's a lot like the departing justice, David Souter, who she'd be replacing. She has some forthright liberal opinions. She has some more kind of moderate stances. And she has been a forceful voice on that court. You know, there are a couple of standout opinions. The big race discrimination case before the Supreme Court this term came out of a panel decision that she was part of.
Right. So talk about that, because I think that's really going to come up. This was a civil rights case that was really a reverse discrimination case having to do with a firefighter's test in Connecticut, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's a really tricky case with hard facts. New Haven was trying to figure out how to promote people in its fire department. It paid an outside consultant a lot of money to design a test that was supposed to be job-related. The city gave the test. Lots of black, white, and Hispanic firefighters took it. Only the white firefighters and one Hispanic scored high enough to be promoted. And so then the city, you know, says it was faced with this conundrum that if it promoted only the white and one Hispanic firefighters, the African-American firefighters might sue, because there's a whole legal theory that if you give a test like this and it has a disparate impact based on race, the test becomes suspect. So New Haven withdrew the test. And that, of course, was incredibly frustrating for the white firefighters who had studied really hard on the test. The district court judge who, you know, heard all the evidence at trial ruled in favor of the city of New Haven, and then the white firefighters appealed. That appeal came before Sotomayor and a couple of other judges on a Second Circuit panel. And then there's this very strange moment in the litigation where Sotomayor's panel, nobody writes a big opinion in analyzing the issues, even though there are some really core constitutional questions about equal protection and reverse discrimination at issue. Instead, there's just this very short opinion. It's really a punt. And then other judges on the Second Circuit complained, in a written opinion about that, and the case caught the attention of the Supreme Court.
Also joining us now, WNYC reporter Elaine Rivera and CUNY law professor Jenny Rivera, who has been a clerk to Judge Sotomayor in the 1990s. Professor Rivera, thanks for coming on WNYC today. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Thank you.
And Elaine Rivera, good
morning.
Hi,
Brian.
Elaine, you've been covering the prospect of a Sonia Sotomayor nomination to the Supreme Court. Now it's happened. What was some of the pre-action you got? What do you think this means to New York?
Oh, it's huge. Not only, particularly for the Latino community, the Puerto Rican community. This is just, it's like, you know, Barack Obama becoming the first black president. She is going to be such a huge symbol for Latinos, particularly Puerto Ricans. And, you know, coming from the South Bronx, as you've mentioned several times, her story proves the American ideal that you could come from a housing project in the South Bronx and you could become a Supreme Court nominee. So it is like a great day, you know, not just for the Puerto Rican community, but, you know, for the country.
And Professor Rivera, when did you clerk for Judge Sotomayor exactly, and on what court, and what was she like to work for?
1993 to 94, when she was on the bench of the Southern District of New York, the Federal District Court, and she was fabulous. You know, she was a mentor. She's a hard worker. She's brilliant. She really is fair with all of her decisions. I mean, she combs through a record. She really comprehensively reviews the law to make sure she's making the right choice. And she treats everyone fairly, whether it's someone who's pro se, that is someone who's a layperson, not a lawyer, not represented by a lawyer, as well as, you know, the partner from the big law firm. They are each treated fairly and justly, and she makes no assumptions about that case until she reads the law and reads the papers.
There are some dissenters about her style from the bench, and we will read part of what Jeffrey Rosen wrote about that in the New Republic when we come back. We also have some people waiting on the phones who have been in Judge Sotomayor's courtrooms in New York City in various capacities, so we'll talk to them as we continue on this historic nomination by President Obama moments ago. Bronx native Sonia Sotomayor from the Second Circuit Federal Appeals Court to sit on the United States Supreme Court. Stay with us.
Sonia, Sonia, tu cabello negro, el sueño mil veces ha sido. Nunca yo podré olvidarte, tú del Volga, eres bella flor. Sonia, Sonia, mi existencia muere, eres cerrada en esta prisión.
Although I grew up in very modest and challenging circumstances, I consider my life to be immeasurably rich. I was raised in a Bronx public housing project, but studied at two of the nation's finest universities.
And there she is, Judge Sonia Sotomayor, moments ago being introduced by President Obama, his first nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. The music, by the way, was the song Sonia, Carlos Gardel, the King of Tango, a 1925 song called Sonia. So, listeners, we've got a full board of calls, people who have appeared in Sonia Sotomayor's courtroom in one way or another as plaintiff, defendant, witness, or victim. Did Sonia Sotomayor ever lock you up, 212-433-WNYC, when she worked for Manhattan District Attorney Morgenthau? How about Natalie in Manhattan? Natalie, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hello, Brian. The reason I'm calling is I was so thrilled to hear this. I was on a jury, obviously federal case. Oh, it's been some years, where she was the judge. The case was transport of cocaine from New York to London, so it's quite a big case and a long, long go. And I never forgot her. First of all, it was a thrill just to see her as a woman on the bench.
And what was she like, real quick?
She was very down to earth. She was very definitive. You know, she took no book from anybody, and she was very firm. I mean, I was very impressed. What can I say? It's been many, many years. But
Natalie, so we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. Corey is an attorney who has appeared before Judge Sotomayor. Corey, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I was before her when she was a district court judge in the early 90s, and it wasn't a terribly important case, but unlike a lot of federal judges, you know, she took us into chambers, and she really rolled up her sleeves in an extremely unpretentious way to try to get the case resolved in a very, very commonsensical kind of, you know, come on, let's see if we can get this resolved and get this done rather than having it drag on like so many federal cases do, where a federal judge often takes a very hands-off view to the whole thing and just lets the parties flounder around. Whereas she, you know, she was extremely helpful, very down to earth, and very pleasant to deal with.
Corey, thank you very much. David in Manhattan, though, is an attorney who seems to have had a different kind of experience. David, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi. I've appeared in federal court before Judge Sotomayor, and my impression of her is that she can utter gratuitous comments which are abusive from the bench in front of other lawyers, in front of other cases.
When you say abusive, that's a strong word. What do you have in mind, for example?
This brief is one of the worst I've ever read on the bench, and I think you should reconsider your essentially calling into question his professionalism. And, you know, she said that in front of about 20 other lawyers, and I didn't think that was appropriate.
All right. Thank you very much. And Jenny Rivera, law professor at CUNY, who has been a clerk for Judge Sotomayor. There is the very critical article in the New Republic by their legal writer, Jeffrey Rosen, called The Case Against Sotomayor. And he seems to reflect some of what David was just saying. He writes, the most consistent concern was that Sotomayor, although an able lawyer, was, quote, not that smart and kind of a bully on the bench, unquote, as one former Second Circuit clerk for another judge put it. She has an inflated opinion of herself and is domineering during oral arguments, but her questions aren't penetrating and don't get to the heart of the issue, he quotes the Second Circuit clerk. During one argument, writes Jeffrey Rosen, an elderly judicial colleague is said to have leaned over and said, will you please stop talking and let them talk? So what's your reaction to that coming from someone like Jeffrey Rosen in the New Republic?
Well, I think others have responded to that and have pointed out, that much of what's in there is by anonymous sources that are not supported by what others who have gone on the record have said about her. And I think people who have appeared before her know that she is prepared for oral argument. She asked probing questions. She has read the file. She's looked in the record. If she has questions that she needs answered to be able to decide the case, and she's going to ask them of counsel, and counsel has to be prepared. And I do find it somewhat interesting that, you know, the judicial temperament of possibly the third woman on the bench is now being brought into question. Something about a person who is a female who has tough questions, I guess, makes some people nervous.
And Elaine Rivera, WNYC News reporter, do you think there's going to be a lot of reaction locally? Obviously, this is a national issue, the nomination of a Supreme Court justice, but she has sat here in New York for so long. There are probably a lot of New Yorkers who are going to come out of the woodwork who are attorneys or plaintiffs or defendants or victims or witnesses who are going to have stories to tell about this judge one way or another.
Yeah, but overall, yes, of course. But I do think clearly, for the most part, many New Yorkers are very supportive of her. Morgenthau, both senators, Gillibrand, Schumer, a congresswoman, Nydia Velazquez, and she brings a tremendous amount of pride to the Puerto Rican community. And, I've been looking at the blogosphere among, Latinas and Latinos, and people just, she has tremendous support in the Puerto Rican community, tremendous support. And again, she's going to be a symbol for all those young Latinas who never thought they could be attorneys, and they're going to see there's a Puerto Rican woman on the Supreme Court. So I think in New York City, she will have just absolute tremendous support behind her.
Emily Bazelon from Slate, is this a slam dunk politically because she's not going to really present anything overwhelmingly controversial or because the Democrats have 60 votes in the Senate?
I think for both of those reasons, with the caveat that a couple of the statements she made in speeches, like the one that you read earlier and also one in which she kind of joked about the appeals courts making policy, those things are going to give the Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee grist for the mill, and they're going to have to go after her because that's what their constituency expects. But I think, the criticisms of her that you were bringing up from Jeff Rosen, those are going to go away because they were based on this kind of anonymous smearing of her. And also because there's good evidence that women judges often are evaluated by lawyers in a way that reveals a lot of gender bias. And the comments about Sotomayor are a really good example of that.
Camille in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Camille.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good.
I am a big, hold on one second. Let me get away from my office. I'm a huge fan. I just wanted to kind of echo what your guests were saying. I'm a product of that inspiration. I worked at the Second Circuit. I was a low-level employee, and Judge Sotomayor, when she joined the court, she said, anyone come to my office, I'm happy to talk to you and help you in any way I can. I came in, and she sat with me, and she, you know, talked to me about my career in a way that, you know, most people in her position would not even consider doing. She's genuine. She's down to earth, and she, you know, she stands by her word. And I'm more proud. I'm an African-American woman from Brooklyn, and I feel more proud and teary-eyed about her nomination than when I did when President Obama was elected. It's a really wonderful thing, and she's just a great person, and I'm very happy for her.
Camille, thank you so much for calling. And Professor Rivera from CUNY Law School, the quote that Emily Bazelon referred to a moment ago from a 2001 speech by Judge Sotomayor at UC Berkeley, where she said, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. Does that make you cringe or wince at all?
No, I think the reality is that most people can understand that a judge is a human being who brings their experiences to the bench, and that women judges, judges of color, judges from various demographic backgrounds and economic backgrounds come with certain experiences. And those experiences certainly do shape who they are, not only how they see the world, but how the world sees them. And so I don't cringe at those kinds of statements at all, and I'm not going to speak for the judge, but I think it's important for all of us to recognize that a person's background and experience is something that shapes who they are and how people perceive them and how society perceives them. Again, in addition to the things that are mentioned, the judge, you know, grew up and went into this profession at a time when there were many fewer women, fewer Latinos, and she's been a first over and over again, and that really speaks to who she is and her leadership.
From our comments page, someone writes, if Republicans attack Sotomayor with a vengeance, it will be one more nail in their political coffin. If the Republicans choose to play racial and sexist politics here, they are dooming their party to being a party for only sexist, racist, white males for another election cycle or possibly another generation. Do you know, Professor Rivera, if, and we just have 20 seconds, is Judge Sotomayor a Catholic?
Yeah, she is.
Emily, you're saying yes?
Yes.
So,
sixth Catholic on the Supreme Court, I believe.
That was my question. But is she known to support the Roe versus Wade decision?
I think that the general consensus is that she is pro-choice. She doesn't have a big opinion on her record about abortion, as far as I know.
All right, and that's going to be the last word for right now. Bronx Judge Sonia Sotomayor, appointed by President Obama this hour, nominated at least to the Supreme Court. Jenny Rivera from the CUNY Law School, WNYC's Elaine Rivera, Emily Bazelon from Slate. Thanks a lot.